Uno, dos, one, two, tres, cuatro.
So listen to these four songs. Now, we'll begin with the number one hit from 1965. Huh? Pretty heavy stuff, right? Here's number 10. Number 15 song, and you begin to get a sense of what's going on in 1965. Tambourine Man, the Dylan tune, covered by the Byrds. And then song number 29.
And tell me over and over and over and over again, my friend, you don't believe we're on the eve of destruction.
That's Eve of Destruction, sung by Barry McGuire, released in 1965. It was an amazing year in American history, 1965, even if it might not have seemed that way at the time. President Johnson, confident, just off a huge electoral victory, introducing the Voting Rights Act, just after some serious rioting in Selma, Alabama.
There is no Negro problem. There is no Southern problem. There is no Northern problem. There is only an American problem. And we are met here tonight as Americans, not as Democrats or Republicans. We are met here as Americans to solve that problem.
6 days of rioting in a Negro section of Los Angeles left behind scenes reminiscent of war-torn cities. More than 100 square blocks were decimated by fire and looters, and few buildings were left intact.
But despite the Voting Rights Act, rioting escalated in 1965. There you're hearing coverage of the violence in Watts in Los Angeles. Protests against the war in Vietnam occurred later on in the year. The burning of draft cards erupted. 1965 was the year the silly 60s became the serious social change 60s we understand today. Historian James Patterson's new book is called The Eve of Destruction, How 1965 Transformed America. He's professor emeritus of history at Brown University. James Patterson, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
I mean, I think I've been waiting for this book for, you know, about 40 years in some ways. As I look back at the events that you recount, it all seems so clear. But at the time, 1965 was the year where you had Sam the Sham and the Pharaohs, the Temptations, the Byrds, and Barry McGuire all in the top 10 or top 100 charts.
Yes, you do. And the music becomes increasingly loud and increasingly topical by the end of the year, compared to mostly very sweet and melodic tunes at the start of 1965. And I see this change in music as a reflection of the larger change in the country.
Lyndon Johnson was very confident at the beginning of 1965. By the end, not so much. Describe that, because you describe it so well in this book.
In 1964, Johnson won a landslide victory over Barry Goldwater to become president in his own right, and he also brought with him huge Democratic majorities in both houses of Congress. He had worked hard during 1964 with various task forces to approach a whole series of social problems, and he intended to solve these with his Great Society legislation in 1965. And he had considerable success. That was the greatest year, actually, in the modern history of American liberal policymaking. They passed the Voting Rights Act, Medicare, Medicaid, an elementary and secondary education act, which was the first time the federal government put a lot of money into public schools, a long overdue reform of a racist immigration system, creation of the National Endowment for the Arts and the Humanities, creation of the Housing and Urban Development Department, on and on and on. It was a remarkable year insofar as liberal legislation was concerned. And for liberals, 1965 was not really the eve of destruction, as my book title says, but it surely was for conservatives.
But it was certainly the year that Ronald Reagan got elected to be governor of California. It began his political career that would come to fruition in 1980, very much on repudiating what happened in 1965.
Yes, he actually got elected in 1966, but by the end of 1965, he was publicly it was clear he was going to run, and very likely that he would beat Governor Pat Brown, who had two terms as governor of California and had beaten Richard Nixon in 1962.
You know, the beginnings, and you cite examples in pop culture, but it's not simply pop culture. The sort of sexual changes that took place, both in terms of gender roles, but also in the expressions of sexuality in pop culture, all that really began to change in 1965 and set the stage for an overwhelming explosion of sexual content that we see all over in America today.
Yes, there was some of that, and a key element in that was the Rolling Stones song, I Can't Get No Satisfaction, which was a top hit in June and July and a strong hit for the rest of the year, which was more sexually explicit than anything the Beatles had done. I mean, the Beatles talked about, I want to hold your hand, but Satisfaction was a somewhat more explicit lyrics, but I wouldn't say that gender roles dramatically changed in 65. That was the sexual revolution really became evident in the later 60s, but you can see the beginnings of it in 65.
Finally, you, in talking about Vietnam, and there's a lot in this book about Vietnam, you quote Philip Caputo, the brilliant writer, who in his book Rumor of War talked about how in 1965, he and his friends were not fighting in Vietnam because they were anti-communists, even though they began that way, but because their friends had been killed or wounded. In a sense, the war in Vietnam goes from being a superpower anti-communist mission to being a kind of Black Hawk Down exercise by the end of 1965.
That was the most obvious way in which 1965 can be called the eve of destruction. At the start of the year, the United States had 23,000 troops in Vietnam. They were not supposedly in combat. They were regarded as military officers, but not really fighting. By the end of the year, 184,000 American troops were in Vietnam. And by the end of 1966, 400,000. So these were the great years of escalation of the war.
Amazing story. The year 1965, the book is The Eve of Destruction, How 1965 Transformed America. James Patterson is professor of history at Brown University. James, thanks so much.
Thank you.
We want to hear from you. What year did everything change? Weigh in on this conversation or anything else. Call us at 877-8-MY-TAKE.
Bullets loading, you're old enough to kill, but not for voting, you don't believe in war. But what's that gun you're toting? And even the Jordan River has bodies.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.